I'm Bill Zortman. Welcome to the South Dakota Farmers Union Show, a part of our It's Your Business series. Show number is 3754. Joining us in the studio today is Luke Rendell, who works with the leadership and all the membership of the South Dakota Farmers Union. Luke, we have a lot to talk about, storylines that just won't quit this morning, and even Glacial Lake's Jim Sire that's going to help us put gas in the pump the right way.
Yeah, good morning, Bill. That's a big topic right now with the way that gas prices are right now. Jim, obviously a big advocate like us with ethanol blends, specifically E30. He'll talk a lot about that and how we can save a little change in our pockets.
And let's see, who else have we got? We've got Mitch Richter. We've got Cindy Zink, South Dakota Soil Health Coalition, Candy Briley from the State Fair. Laura Edwards, did she get hit by the storm last night? We'll find out. And we've got a lady that was quoted by Reuters last week, Megan Kingsbury, President and CEO of Kingsbury and Associates. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So this is the big deal. 8,000 head packing plant, Rapid City, modern. What are you able to tell us this morning that's going to make us kind of whet our appetite?
Well, it should be exciting to think about anything that as a producer puts competition back into the market and gives us a shot of breaking up what we have perceived to be a monopoly with as producers with the big four. That's the goal and intention of this packing facility. And as a fifth generation producer from Western South Dakota, having the business capability in the background to be able to effectively make this change, not only for myself and for my family and but for generations to come, this is very near and dear to my heart. So I'm excited to be on the program with you this morning.
Megan, it's not only a beef plant, but bison packing as well. Tell us how that came together.
You know, bison is one of those untapped proteins that we currently don't accept into our mainstream diets. But under the Biden administration, we are looking forward to them introducing a number of bills and legislation that will introduce bison both into what we hope to be the Department of Defense as well as into our schools, protein consumption on a daily basis. So with that, when you look at the ability to produce bison, we have the producers, but we don't have the packers. So it's important for us to be able to, with a blank piece of paper on this particular facility and not having to retrofit, do it right from the beginning and really have an eye on that bison market and see where it's going to go and also create a market for it as it is going to be a demand and we see in the near future, especially with our friends over at our Fortune 100 companies that continue to give us a resounding yes on wanting to get into that market for protein supply.
So we're not only talking Rapid City, but we're talking one of my favorite towns. I hired a lot of people out of Greenville, South Carolina. I was glad to see the two coming together.
Yes. Well, that is what I would consider a second home. You know, I grew up in South Dakota, and Western South Dakota is home to me. I'll be here for the next 50 years. But I was able to spend some time on the East Coast and made some roots and made some strides in Greenville, South Carolina, and in that Southeast market. So having a home office in Greenville is important to us. I've got great staff, and we also have facilities in New York as well.
Megan, this is Luke with Farmers Union. Thank you again for being on with us this morning. Some of our listeners might not know exactly the details of the project coming up here. Could you kind of just delve into that a little bit more of the specifics of what the plant will do, how many head it'll operate, etc.?
Sure. So our announcement back on May 27th, Luke, highlighted the fact that it is a 1 million square foot facility, and that is simply on the packing side. We also have more square footage that we'll be adding in a bolt-on capacity as we go through the design build process. This facility will process 8,000 head a day of both fat and cull cattle. And in addition to that, the bison specialty lines. We anticipate adding more than one bison line through the ramp-up phase. So we're very excited about that as well.
Megan, can you talk a little bit about the technology that will be put into this plant? I know there's a lot of interest in that, you know, maybe as far as like odor control or you know, byproduct and whatnot like that.
Absolutely. So it's very important for us to be responsible citizens, to be good neighbors to our immediate community, as well as be an agent to push forward the green energy initiatives that we're seeing necessary for ongoing sustainable life around the world. Along with that, our engineering team is able to take a close look at technology that's currently being used in Europe and throughout Asia and even into Australia, and look at those tech pieces within those packing facilities and extract the tech that is particularly expeditious and up to date. And then we're able to backfill that and create a fully automated line with brand new technology. So when I'm speaking specifically to the technology piece, Luke, we're looking at a complete methane gas recapture within that 1 million square foot facility. What that equates to is that for our neighbors, there will be zero odor. It will look like a state-of-the-art automotive manufacturing facility. It will smell like one as well. So we're excited to see that methane gas getting put back into use. We are utilizing that in our energy calculations to provide energy for a facility of this size. We also are looking at a full CNC product line. So instead of individuals having to use traditional knives and the butchering concept, we're using air knives for dehiding livestock, et cetera. So again, the human error component, including the repeatability factor, as you can tell, the efficiencies there are significant. Additionally, with the tech, we're adding a solar component for renewable energy that we'll be able to put back into the grid. And our hope and expectation based on our current calculations, Luke, is that we will be putting energy back into the grid based on our methane gas recapture, our solar capture, and what we're able to bring in efficiencies through our fully tech line production. We also have a plus or minus 70% water recycling on site. So all of the water that we're using, we are recycling and repurposing on site before it ever hits the municipality. And then we're also looking forward to working with the electric, east-west electric grid for those tie-ins. That's very clean energy, and that's one thing that points to this particular site at the Black Hills Industrial Park is that grid tie-in there that's specific for the east-west grids.
Megan Kingsbury, President, CEO of Kingsbury & Associates, the 8,000 head a day just kind of reaches out and grabs you. All the things that you're mentioning as far as no odor, cattle will be shipped in, harvested as efficient and humane as possible. You won't see the cattle for the most part. And it's almost interesting that we've got Holstone in the eastern part of the state. They're talking about a modern pork plant, unlike some of the others we've seen that may get here if you can put it in the right neighborhood. And you've already got your neighborhood circled out west.
Yes, we sure do. You know, and this the reason that we've got this circled out west, again, goes back to the very personal reason that I am from Western South Dakota, and this project is a legacy project for me. Hence the name of the development company, Western Legacy Development Corporation. The Western component is pretty easy to get to within that name. It's Western South Dakota. It's the American West. It's the way of life and the values that we hold so near and dear to us, and that we're afraid are going to be extinct within the next generation if we don't embrace this project and see it through to completion and get that competition back, redistribute that wealth back into the producer's pocket, put that second bidder back into the cash market. So the name for us, that Western Legacy, as well as the location, it all ties into one, Bill. And the legacy part is, you know, if there's one thing that every human being should do is they should strive to leave the world a better place. And the legacy component of this for me is that that's exactly what I was born and raised and taught through our Western values and cowboy way of life. And that's my contribution. This is the best way to give back that I know how.
All right, so let's talk about the big four that have gotten a lot of attention with all of the lawmakers around the country. They're complaining. The people that are raising the cattle are not able to get the price they need at the marketplace. The big four are taking advantage, according to what we hear from our senators and our congressmen. How are you going to compete with the big four that already have their game in planned when you're putting something new out in the West?
So there's a couple things that we look at. Obviously, a lot of things that the big four does is hearsay. We're not in their plants. As producers, we moan and groan about it, and we pick up on what we can from what we know. So what we know is that they're not buying primarily out of the barn. And I think that's a key component. Our procurement model for this facility, we're that second bidder in that cash market. So instead of one bid, we're looking at two bids guaranteed in these cash markets. We're also looking at restoring competition with local feedlots, getting the cobwebs dusted off of those, keeping those calves in state and fattening them up, keeping them in this five-state region. We're also looking at minimal, what we would often refer to as AMAs. Obviously, with a facility of this size, we do have to have a sustainable bottom line of livestock flowing through the facility, so there is some need for some contractual obligations. But this facility is privately held. It will be privately held. It is privately funded through my firm, and we have all the resources to compete with the big four. You know, they would have to go back and retrofit their facilities. We're starting with a blank sheet of paper. So we're able to listen to the people, the producers, to the Biden administration, to our senators and congressmen, and come together with a clean sheet of paper and make this thing really work.
You're a player. Date you're looking at?
Date we're looking at? We're in research and development with our teams. We'll have all of our engineering and design completion done by end of 2022, break ground January 2023. We're looking at a three-year time until we flip the switch on the first line. Obviously, we're going to have to ramp up incrementally, but we'll get that bison line and that beef line rolling 3 years from groundbreaking. So 2026.
If you will, let's maybe two or three times a year, let's keep talking about it, kind of bring people up to date. I think everybody in South Dakota and neighboring states are saying, we got to make this work.
We do. We have no choice. We're going to be extinct as producers and as ranchers, as farmers within the next generation. We have to retain that talent, and I'd love to keep the dialogue going.
You're on with us, Megan Kingsbury, President, CEO of Kingsbury & Associates. Little real estate thrown in, but you're doing some good things. Keep us posted.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Well, voters went to the polls just a week ago. There was a defeat, but our Mitch Richter is here to explain the defeat of Amendment C. And we have a governor's ag summit coming up, Medicaid expansion. What else, Luke?
Well, I think that's about it for now that we were going to talk with Mitch about. Mitch, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Really fine. Thank you.
Governor's ag summit coming up here June 22nd and 23rd. What do we need to know, Mitch?
Well, you know, it's a great time for ag producers in South Dakota to get together. The Department of Ag and Natural Resources does a really good job of putting this on. They bring in some motivational speakers as well as some agriculture resources, whether it's seed sales or some of the farm organizations, USDA and FSA, show up and talk about what's coming up or what's new that people need to know about. So it's a good opportunity to network with some of your local neighbors as well as other people across the state. It's 2-day summit's going to be in Brookings. First day is mainly the things that I just talked about, and then the second day they go out and they're going to visit a dairy and do some tours of some farms and ranches, and then of course see the Precision Ag building in Brookings, which is really something that's going to help South Dakota in the long run. So good deal that the state government puts on, and we're happy to attend.
Medicaid expansion, where were you with that?
Well, we we made sure that Amendment C did not pass last week. It went down 2-1, and that would have put a little bit of a damper on being able to get Medicaid expansion passed. But so Amendment C went down, and that, as you know, talked about if you spent more than $10 million over 5 years, you would have to take 60% more of the public vote to pass it. And that was defeated. So we are on the ballot with Medicaid expansion, and that is Amendment D that you'll get to vote on in November. There's about 42,000, a little more than 42,000 people in South Dakota apply for Medicaid expansion. We're one of 12 states that have not done it yet. And with the COVID dollars, the federal government is giving us a 5% spiff to get us to do that for the next 2 years. And so over the course of 5 years, it'll bring in about $1.3 billion to the state of South Dakota. It'll hopefully make sure that we have rural health care access. No one wants to drive 120 or 150 miles to get an x-ray on something that may have happened on the farm or those types of things. So we, our South Dakota Farmers Union is supportive, as we have been for the last several years, of Medicaid expansion. And we're hopeful. We've got a very, very broad-based group that is supporting it. Everyone from AARP to the American Cancer Society, a lot of different medical groups. The three large healthcare systems in South Dakota are supportive, and we continue to build that out. So if you want us to come and talk about Medicaid expansion to your service group or your organization, contact South Dakota Farmers Union, and we will make sure we get somebody there to talk to your group and explain it further in the next several months.
Mitch Richter, appreciate your visit. We'll be talking again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bill.
And we have another guest that you want to talk to this morning, Luke.
Yeah, good morning. Cindy, this is Luke here. Cindy's with South Dakota Soil Health Coalition, and we've got an event actually coming up that we're doing jointly together, and Cindy has some other field days that she does. But good morning, Cindy. How are you?
Good morning, Luke, and good morning, Bill. I'm doing fine, thanks. How about you guys?
We're doing good. Well. Cindy, I know busy summer for South Dakota Soil Health Coalition. You know, you've got field days in South Dakota. Can you give us a wrap down of what that all entails?
I'd love to, yeah. So today, actually, I'm in Myrtle, South Dakota. We have our soils and range days for the youth. So that's a particular part we want to continue to educate. So we are here today and tomorrow, and then some upcoming ones that I want to share with the listeners is June 29th. We have one near Cologne at Van Manchines, and that one's going to work primarily with our grasslands and helping us to know how to get the most out of our grasslands. So that one is on the 29th, like I said, and it starts in the morning, starts at 9 o'clock. And we do have all of this information on our website at sdsoilhealthcoalition.org. And then another one that Luke kind of led into was on July 21st. So July 21st, we're going to be at Scott and Amber Klosek in Doral County. And we are excited to partner with South Dakota Farmers Union on that event. It'll start in the morning. We're looking at 10 a.m. And we'll do some field looking at some of the different practices that the Klosek have established on their operation, and then seeing some of the different things. You know, our spring and summer have been a little unusual for most parts of the state. In the Northeast, we're extremely wet, where, you know, we still have considerable droughts in a lot of part of the state. So we'll be doing some of those different conversation and seeing how some of these different field events can help people take back to their operation.
Cindy, I think you hit it kind of on the head with the crazy weather we've been having, you know, droughts in some part of the states and wet in others. But, you know, soil health, it can help mitigate some of those issues, can't it?
Exactly, yeah. And that's where we try to get to all different parts of the states. We're actually having some one-on-one events up in the Northeast. We had, you know, quite a bit of considerable rain up in that area, and they're looking at some prevent plant acres possibly and not being able to get into the field. So looking at some different cover crops and wanting to know some of some different mixes. So if you are listening and you have some interest in wanting to know some different mixes, just give us a call, 605-280-4190, and we can help you with that, or we can set up a round table with some neighbors and just get you some information. One aspect I do want to highlight that we are planning for this year is August 31st through September 2nd. And it kind of entails the state fair too. We will be having our soil health school. And that is a 2.5 day event where we have in classroom and field events, and we look at different test plots that we have and give people lots of different good ideas to take back to their operations.
So, Cindy, I do have a question at the soil health field days and even at the soil health school. Are you able to do visual comparisons to see the benefits, visually see the benefits of soil health practices?
Right, yeah. So especially at soil health school, we actually put up some different trials. You know, and we put in some moisture sensors so you can see the different practices, how much moisture some of the plants are using versus some of the others with the different practices. We do have one where we're using some different corn types and in just having those comparisons so people can see the difference.
Well, I tell you what, I will make sure to get signed up for your soil health school. I know it's such an important topic right now. You know, just with environmental aspects of taking care of our land, and it'll take care of us. But soil health also helps with the carbon sequestration, correct?
Correct, yeah. And those, like you said, they're hot topics right now. And just learning as much as you can as to what you're doing on your operation. And if there's something you are interested in learning more about and maybe trying on, you know, one field. And seeing what the difference might be for your operation. And those are the things that we can help with and help you plan so it's successful.
Cindy Zink, appreciate you. South Dakota Soil Health Coalition. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right, you're going to meet the Farm Family of the Month. Three brothers, Larry, Tom, Don, work together, retiring together. How did they get along together? We'll find out. And we'll hear from Jim Sire. What you should put in your tank and how economical it can be. Welcome back to the South Dakota Farmers Union Show. I'm Bill Zortman. Luke Rendell is with us. Time for a family visit. Well, it's time to meet our South Dakota Farmers Union Farm Family of the Month. And I've got Larry Baruth with us this morning. Larry, you're the oldest, correct?
I'm the oldest at 77 years old.
Larry, as we talk about the Baruth family, you've got Larry, Tom, Ron with us, and you all farmed together until you retired in 2020. Why 2020?
Well, we all had to, it had to happen sometime, and we just had to make a decision to, I guess, do it while we're all still alive. There's things we want to do.
Tell us about the farming itself. Larry, if you will, kind of tell us why you guys were as diverse as you were and all the things that you were able to do. And you say you're 77, 78 today?
No, 77. I'll be 78 next month. Yeah. Well, I think it was basically thanks to our father. He made sure that we had hogs and cattle. And then my brother Ronnie decided he wanted some sheep, so we had sheep too. And as far as raising crops, it was always corn, and well, it wasn't soybeans to start with, but then it became soybeans and wheat. So we tried a few other things like triticale and I don't remember everything, and peas. Yeah, field peas, tried them for a while, but anyway, the diversity was, I guess, just because we could.
So who is number two as far as age?
Tom.
Tom?
I'll put the phone to Tim. Here he is.
Tom, as we talk to you, you know, I understand you guys are great storytellers. You started milking cows at 5. What else should we know about you? Being the middle is not always the easiest to do.
No, this is Tom, and I am the middle. And no, somebody had to be the middle one, but... Not by choice, but I was lucky because I had an escape in life, and that was my brothers let me do the hogs. So nobody else wanted to do the hogs, so I could always escape there. And but we did start milking at age of 5. My mother and father knew that. Part of being a responsible person was having chores to do. And so when we had chores to do, that was our source of income. So we would get a third, each of us would get a third of the cream check. And so that gave us incentive to milk the cows and use that for our income. So we would milk cows and gather the eggs and do things like that. So we would do that before we would go to school in the morning, and we would do that before we would have supper at night. So that was the way we grew up.
Ron is the youngest. So, Ron, what did you learn from Larry and Tom that helped you being the youngest? Did that make you the smartest?
This is Ron. No, it doesn't make me the smartest. I guess what I learned from them is how to milk cows and those type of things, because that's kind of how you pass down. And even after they were gone to work and gone to college, I milked cows till I graduated from high school. And when I did that and went away to college, my dad said the milk cows were gone. So that was the end of that. So that's kind of how that went.
Tell us about going into the no-till practices beginning in the 1990s, if you will, Ron.
I saw that there was a lot of times when we were short of moisture in the fall and wanted to get into wheat, and the winter wheat especially. And so you go out there and you till the land and you get rid of what little moisture you have. And so then you plant your wheat, and if you don't get any more moisture, then you get a failed crop. But a lot of times there was moisture below the surface, so that's how we got started at it. We rented a no-till drill and saw that we could do that and go right into corn stalks and raise the crop. And so that's what got us started. And we started doing that. And then, quite honestly, we decided to go with it full bore. There's a lot of people in our area that tried it one year, and then they didn't get a very good crop the next year because their organic matter had not deteriorated. And so then they quit. And we just stayed with it. And then our organic matter stayed stable, and we ended up raising good crops every year that way.
Larry, let's go back to you. You are the oldest. Tips for preparing for retirement. Now, you being the oldest, the others could have waited a little longer before they retired. So why did all three of you decide to move forward about the same time?
Well, this is Larry, and I think basically we were talking about this the other day, and it was kind of Ronnie's idea that we all retire. We had to do it sometime, and you know, and me being the oldest, I thought, like you just said, that you know, I'd be the first one to retire, and then one by one we all would. But anyway, we all run into things we wanted to do. Here's somebody calling me. I'll pass it on to Tom.
You know, that I can't imagine the three of you together and doing all the things that you're doing and not having a phone ring, kids come in the door, or a problem jumping out in front of you. Tom, from that side of it, you were the guy in the middle. You had to look up, you had to look down. How did you do that?
Well, okay, we always had something going on, but we were able to work together. And the interesting thing is, we were able to talk things out, and sometimes we just had to do it. And by all getting together, and sometimes there'd be a heated dispute, but it always worked out that we were able to talk it out. And getting back to how we retired, we all owned the machinery together, and so we couldn't, you know, we had to, we either had to buy each other out or we just had to all quit together. And we were all in good health, and so the time to quit was when we could quit, and we just all quit together. That was the way it would work. There was no talking about it. We just had to retire together.
So
we still had good health and could do that.
You know, I wonder about today, the fact that you're in the middle of the sales, or you've done your sales. You now are still brothers. That nothing changed there. But how do you get along today? Ron, you're the youngest. How do you get along today?
Well, we get along very well. Very well, you know. We go to each other's houses for special events, and we'll get to get together once in a while just for a little happy hour.
Amazing. What did you think, Luke?
Well, how amazing is it that three brothers can work that long together and retire together?
One did the hogs.
One did the milk. Yep.
And the other were the cows. It was like,
and they get along.
And they get along. Amazing.
They need to go to D.C.
Yes, they do. And what about gas prices? We have that now. Jim Sire, Glacial Lakes, he joins us this morning. I'm told that we're actually a little better off than the national average, which is $5 at $4.79 in South Dakota. But, Jim, that's still kind of tall cotton.
That's huge. You know, to shell out a $5 bill to own a vehicle and get you down the road maybe 20 miles.
So when we talk about that, you have been one of those that we've had on, and we've had a number of people that have talked ethanol. We've talked a lot of different alternatives. The plug-in is always an alternative you can use, but that doesn't do those in the field much good in South Dakota.
No, it doesn't, and it's not affordable for a lot of folks. So the vehicles are expensive. They're not in the infrastructure isn't in place to make sure that they can be used widely. So we feel like we have a good complementary step to EVs, which I do believe are eventually going to be here, and that is higher blends of ethanol.
All right. You did send me some numbers this morning, and I think we ought to share them with the audience because we always want to know where we can get a bargain. We just talked a little bit in our 9 o'clock show where we talked about people able to buy this, that, and the other that can be at a price. But do you want to share some of the communities, particularly, I guess, Watertown, Aberdeen, maybe Huron, as the three that you could give some great examples?
Yes, we've got 399 here in Watertown for E30. Interestingly enough, over the weekend I found an E20 pump or E20 station at 403, which for folks if they're a little hesitant to go to E30, then you can start at E20 and almost get the same amount of savings. That's 66 cents below what was offered at the same pump on E10. So those are real savings, Bill. That's 20 gallons. That's over $10. And I guess personally, I pulled up with my boat and put E20 in my boat. Now I will be quick to admit that this is a large Chevy engine in this boat. So. It's just like an automobile engine, and not necessarily the Yamahas and the Mercuries and some of that they caution you against. But certainly took it out on the water, no issues whatsoever, and was able to enjoy that savings. And I think that tank held over 50 gallons.
What Jim did tell us from Glacial Lakes is that you could mix E10 with a 25 or a 55. You should be okay. When we get back, we're going to talk the state fair. Laura Edwards has what we can expect and what happens if a climatologist finds the storm is out of her neighborhood. She'll tell you.
Our state fair is a great state fair. Don't miss it. Don't even be late.
Candy Briley is with us. Do you still like that song?
Love it. Gets better every time.
Oh, well, you get better every time. That's what I've heard.
I hope so.
All right. So if you can, we're kind of zeroing in. What's the calendar say?
Yeah, we're getting down there. 78 days, 20 hours, 8 minutes, and 10 seconds and counting.
All right. We got about 3 minutes. This is a network show this morning, and they tell me we got to keep on the clock. So tell us what we ought to know between now and then and for the state fair.
Yeah, well, I know this morning that a big focus was on Farmers Union, so we certainly look forward to hosting South Dakota Farmers Union Day, and we're just thrilled to continue our partnership with them and look forward to the many things they'll be doing on their day, like the scholarship award, the Farmer Share Luncheon, the FFA Safety Quiz Bowl, and then they always have their safety trailer on 3rd Street, so that's always really great. for people to check out. And Farmers Union Day will be on Saturday, September 3rd, so we look forward to that. A couple of different things you might find at this year's fair, a couple of scheduling notes that we'll be talking about more and more. Just to remind people, the Open Class Sheep Show will be held on August 27th and 28th. That's ahead of the fair in the 4-H Livestock Complex. And then the Open Class Beef Show is August 30th and August 31st in the 4-H Livestock Complex. Again, ahead of the fair. Next year, we hope to be bringing back some of the regular scheduling with the completion of the decks next June. So, and then we also have the something new is the South Dakota State University Virtual Reality Arcade that's coming. Virtual reality gaming is becoming huge with Gen Zers, and different colleges and techs and even academic programs and clubs are being formed around virtual reality gaming. So we look forward to bringing that aspect to the fair. And then also a really cool art component to the fair is we'll have a mural painter named Arky coming, and the theme is going to be different farm animals, and he's going to paint a new mural every day, so that's going to be super cool, bring some vibrancy to the fair, and then we'll have them for display for the rest of the year. And just on a final note that I have to share, a note that Farron Wall, who is our state fair commissioner chairman, wrote that just gets people excited thinking about the fair. So when you ask us about our excitement level, he wrote, your time at the fair will afford you a collective experience different than you'll find at other state fairs, and you won't have to share the space with headcounts in the millions. Instead, you'll discover 5 packed days of true South Dakota you simply can't get anywhere else. So that excites me for the fair. It excites our team, and we're working really hard to produce the best fair experience possible for people so they can come gather September 1st through September 5th.
Candy Briley, South Dakota State Fair. We'll talk soon.
Great. Thank you.
South Dakota State climatologist Laura Edwards with us this morning. You had a storm up in that area, but did you just roll over and go back to sleep? What'd you do?
Yeah, you know, when we're expecting severe weather, I try to keep the weather radio on so we can hear it. And so we did hear it early morning today, but then, you know, I checked the radar, and it looked like it was going north of us, so I didn't do too much after that. I did just roll over and go back to sleep.
You know, we've got some unusual weather going on right now, some large hail that we've heard out in the west, a little bit just north of you this past night. So tell us what we're up against and what we should look for through Father's Day.
Yeah, we've certainly had a very active season of severe weather so far this year. And the hail and wind has certainly been a big issue, you know, going all the way back to the derecho on May 12th. You know, state average for tornadoes is about 30 a year, and we've already seen, I think, about 20 for the season so far, and we're just getting to the peak season for severe weather in South Dakota. So certainly I encourage folks to keep eyes and ears open and don't take it lightly. You know, tornadoes can happen, you know, in the blink of an eye, and be weather aware, especially if you're outside. Looking out ahead, though, the heater is going to be turning on full blast this weekend for Father's Day weekend, and Juneteenth, I believe, is also celebrated on Monday for a lot of us. So a 3-day weekend, potentially. Looks like temperatures reaching the century mark. 100 degrees is the forecast high for Sunday in Sioux Falls. That's about 20 degrees above average for this time of year. So certainly it's going to be hot. Heat is a real issue as well, health-wise. And so stay cool, stay hydrated whenever you can. I know people are going to want to be outside, you know, going fishing, camping, all those kinds of things, but certainly be ready for the heat. It doesn't look like much for precipitation at all. Actually, it'll be pretty dry after tomorrow, so it'll be pretty dry for the next week or so. So weather, hopefully, as far as precipitation goes, won't be much of a problem.
Well, we're at a time frame right now where Juneteenth, Father's Day, longest day of sunshine. Is that always the hottest time of the year that we should expect?
You know, usually we see our peak warmest days a little bit after the solstice. You know, it's kind of a lag effect. You know, kind of like how we see the regular daytime cycle with our peak sun at noon, but our warmest temperature is usually, you know, a couple hours later in the early afternoon. Same thing on the seasonal cycle, where we have the longest day, but usually the hottest day is a little bit after that.
So what are you anticipating beyond Father's Day? Is there any patterns out there that you see way out in the Indian Ocean, the Pacific, eventually getting on coast, eventually getting to us? What do you see?
Yeah, we're still looking at La Nina being a factor, and it looks like we're starting to finally see what's often a summertime La Nina pattern with warmer and drier conditions coming up to South Dakota. So it looks like warmer than average temperatures are favored really for the rest of June. So we're really seeing this a big pattern change here from that cool pattern to the warmer pattern. And precipitation, we're starting to see more of a drier signal, or at least near average. We have been kind of wet lately with, you know, in the Sioux Falls area with several rainy days, you know, in the last couple of weeks, but it looks like that might change too.
Well, we definitely have got some crazy weather out there, Bill.
You think?
It's one thing after another, it seems like, but, you know, that's South Dakota for you.
You got a short list. What's coming?
Short list. We have our state policy meeting here July 14th. This is where we set policy going forward. We draft it, I should say, and then our members will obviously vote on it. Big plug for our safety trailer that's out there roaming the country. Any information on that you guys are interested in, visit our website, sdfu.org. Also, our South Dakota Farmers Union camps. Those are up and rolling. Again, hit our events calendar. Get registered for those in July.
And, of course, Candy was on Big Safety Quiz. We've had those three teams have already been on. We've had a guy that challenged him.
Championship round at the South Dakota State Fair, September 3rd.
Well, we appreciate you being with us. For the thousands of our monthly South Dakota Farmers Union members, I'm Bill Zortman, Luke Rendell. Our time is up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at